Welcome you tonight, and we welcome all of those of you that are online with us tonight as well. Tonight, in the short time that we have for 30 minutes, we're going to talk about a place called Heshbon, H-E-S-H-B-O-N. It's on the screen. Tel Heshbon. Tel just means a mound. It's an archaeological site, and we'll talk quite a bit about it tonight. There's a lot of information about this site. It's kind of a site that's been overlooked. It's not as popular as Megiddo or Beth Shan or Dan or a bunch of the others. It's not near as popular. For one reason, it's not in Israel. It's in Jordan. But in Numbers chapter 21, verses 21 through 31, is the main reference to this archaeological biblical site. Let's begin in Numbers 21, 21 and read four or five verses here. Numbers 21, 21. Then Israel sent messengers to Sihon, S-I-H-O-N, king of the Amorites. You remember his antics and his goings in the Old Testament. Verse 22, let me pass through your land. We will not turn aside into the field or vineyard. We will not drink the water of a well. We will go by the king's highway until we have passed through your territory. But King Sihon would not allow Israel to pass through his territory. He gathered all of his people together and went out against Israel to the wilderness and came to Jahaz and fought against Israel. Verse 24, and Israel defeated him with the edge of the sword and took possession of his land from the Arnon to the Jabbok. Those are two rivers. Jabbok in the north, Ammon in the south, bordering his territory, as far as to the Amorites, for the border of the Amorites was strong. And Israel took all their cities, and Israel settled in all the cities of the Amorites in Heshbon and in all of its villages, for Heshbon was the city of Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who had fought against the former king of Moab and taken all his land out of his hand as far as the Arnon, which is in the south. Now, according to Numbers 21, 21 through 31, the Israelites killed this king Sihon and settled in Heshbon. You read about that in verse 25 of Numbers 21. At the same time of the conquest, we'll show you a map here in just a moment. The city of Heshbon was given to the tribes of Reuben and Gad. This is found in Joshua 13, beginning in verse 8 and verses following. But it's also found in Joshua 13, verse 17 and Numbers 32, 37, where only Reuben was given the place, in contrast to Joshua 13, 27, where Gad was given the city for an inheritance. This city, Heshbon, has been mentioned in the Bible 38 times. Well, if it's mentioned 38 times, it's got to have some significance. It's got to have a lot of connection to a lot of tribes, to a lot of individuals, to a lot of different people. Most of them identify, of course, with the Amorite king Sihon. And, of course, it's found in Deuteronomy, Joshua, and many other places as well. In fact, the city is mentioned in the books of Numbers, Deuteronomy, and Joshua. It is located east of the Jordan River in the region of Moab. It was the capital of Sihon, who was the king, of course, the Amorites. The ruins of the ancient city of Heshbon was located there in a modern village, what we know as today as Heshban, H-E-S-B-A-N, which is about 12 miles south and west of Amman, Jordan. We were in Jordan for 3 days in Amman and Madaba, Nebo, Mount Nebo, and all the way down to Petra and a few other places. And, of course, 85 or whatever percent it is, a large percent of Jordan is nothing but desert anyway. So when you go just east and on the other side of the Jordan River, east of Jericho, you'll be into Jordan, and it is a population that's usually in the north, just all around Amman, and then trickles down on the eastern side of course, the Jordan River and the Dead Sea. Here's not too many good maps, but anyway, you can see the red dot there in the middle. That's Heshbon. You see where the Dead Sea is. In the south, on the to the right of the Dead Sea, is the Moab, and right above Heshbon is Amman, Jordan. And then everything off to the right over there is, of course, nothing but desert. And so your main population is closer to the Dead Sea and the Jordan River on this side. Gives you some idea. I may have another one here to show a little bit later. When you look at the ruins of Heshbon, that they're located on a summit or a hill and are about a mile in circumference. The large ruined reservoir nearby may be what Solomon said in Solomon 7:4, may be the pools of Heshbon that's mentioned in the Song of Solomon 7:4. Let me see. Okay, here's a picture, of course, of the mound. Song of Solomon 7:4 says, "Your neck is like an ivory tower. Your eyes are pools in Heshbon." And then it continues on. When you look at Joshua chapter 21, around verse 38, 39, Heshbon is said to have been given to the Levites from the tribe of Gad. And of course, here's a picture. This is has to be in the spring of the year because of all the greenery. So it's just a large mound, but it's roughly about a mile in circumference. You remember the story of Jephthah's confrontation with the Amorites. Remember about his confrontation there back in Judges chapter 11, I believe it is, beginning verse 19. And in Judges 11:19, it asserts that Israel had lived in Heshbon and its villages for 300 years. In the book of Isaiah, chapter 15 and chapter 16, and in Jeremiah chapter 48, Heshbon is mentioned in oracles of judgment against Moab, implying that during the final finishing of those books, the Moabites, not the Amorites, controlled the city. However, when you look in Jeremiah 49:3, it implies that the Amorites were still in control of the city, at least during the time of the prophet Jeremiah. The last biblical reference to Heshbon is in Nehemiah chapter 9, verse 22, where the site is referred to again in the retelling of the conquest. Here's the verse. "And you gave them kingdoms and peoples and allotted to them every corner. So they took possession of the land of Sihon, the king of Heshbon, and the land of Og, king of Bashan." So Heshbon played a very significant role in biblical narratives and continued to do so in later periods as well. It's located about 2,900 feet above sea level. Now you saw the proximity it was to the Dead Sea, which is 1,350 feet below sea level, and along the edge of the Highland Plateau, overlooking the Jordan River from the east. And its summit provides a real panoramic view of the story of the Bible. To the southeast, across the plains of Madaba, maybe we can talk about Madaba again. It's a fantastic place to visit. Known in the Old Testament as the tableland of the Transjordan, it is a highly congested region there. Because here King David, back in 1 Chronicles 19, the Israelite ruler Ahab and Omri and Jeroboam II in 2 Kings 14:25, and others in 2 Chronicles, fought against the neighboring nations for control over this very strategic area. It was really a good area for agriculture on this plateau area. The Amorites and the Moabites, of course, were Israel's most notable adversaries, besides the Philistines. Of course, that's later on. And in Isaiah 15 and Jeremiah 48. Now, to the southwest of Heshbon lies Mount Nebo. When we visited Mount Nebo back in 2010, my wife would tell you that was her favorite place of all when we toured Jordan, and after the dig was over, we toured Israel as well. You stand at Mount Nebo, you can look out over the Jordan River, you can look out over on a clear day and see Jerusalem, and on a real clear day, you can even see the Mediterranean Sea. So it's a very prominent ridge that has two prominent peaks on it. And from this vantage point, of course, this is where God showed Moses the entire sweep of the Promised Land. And then, of course, God buried this great Israelite leader in an unknown location to us, somewhere in the vicinity of Nebo when he died back in Deuteronomy chapters 32 and 34. So because of its commanding location, its natural endowments in terms of annual rainfall amounts, it does get some good rainfall there, fertile valleys and slopes, great construction could go on because it had quality limestone present. Heshbon has been a place for a demonstration of power and prestige by a number of various rulers going all the way back into the Old Testament. Therefore, those excavations at the site have uncovered traces of long succession of regional and imperial powers that have influenced the material culture and daily life there at Heshbon over time, including the Egyptians, the Assyrians, the Neo-Babylonians, the Greeks, the Romans, the Ottomans, and the British, all the way down through history. Here's a picture of the... please flip the next one. The next picture. There we go. Here's a picture of the archaeological site. We'll have a close-up of just what we're seeing in the background in just a little bit. The following people, following persons, represented various ancient kingdoms and empires that brought widespread notoriety to this area and widespread notoriety to Heshbon and influenced the lives of the inhabitants. We know about King Sihon. Amorite king attested 37 times, mentioned 37 times in the Hebrew Bible, in Numbers, Deuteronomy, and so forth. Sihon utilized this city, Heshbon, as the epicenter of his domain. And then he stretched his boundaries to the river Arnon to the south and Jabbok in the north, but was defeated, of course, in the Battle of the Israelites that took place. Solomon, King Solomon, the most famous person associated, I think, with Heshbon. King Solomon followed, of course, his father David as ruler of Israel. 1 Kings 4:19 appears to designate Heshbon, there's two spellings of it, as the capital of Solomon's 12th district. And that's an interesting story within itself. And the more celebrated text back in Ecclesiastes 2:4-6 and Song of Solomon that we've already read, 7:4, associate Solomon with Heshbon and its reservoir. We'll talk about the reservoir here shortly. Mishnah, M-E-S-H-A, Moabite, is the well-known stele that's known throughout the world. The Moabite king boasts about his conquest of the land and on the Madaba Plains. While he mentions the nearby towns of Madaba and Nebo in his stele, the word Heshbon is absent. But the reservoir that is found there attests differently to the fact. And of course, he was being a Moabite, living in that area. Here's a picture. I think this is a well-known picture. Okay, you'll have to flip it because my... Yeah. There we go. There's a picture of that stele as it's in the museums. I believe this is in the Louvre at present time. Abinadab, remember the story mentioned in the Bible? An Amorite, an inscribed bronze bottle that was unearthed at Amman, Jordan, probably served as an object to honor this Amorite king, Abinadab. Scholars offer various interpretations about all of this, but the whole message alludes to the fact that, at least in part, to the prosperity that was reflected there at Heshbon during that time. Herod the Great is also connected to this city, appointed, of course, by the Romans. Heshbon was apparently among the cities that included that Herod the Great included in some of his massive building projects. Here's another picture. Well, no, there isn't. You go ahead and flip it. There we go. Of some of the ruins there. There's not a whole lot of ruins there. A lot of rock and dirt. But trust me, this is Heshbon, and this is what you see when you go there. It's like Dr. Culberson up in Birmingham, where I've gone to Israel and Egypt with. Just got back from a two-week tour of the seven churches of Asia and Greece, and he sent me a lot of pictures. But the only pictures that are really amount to anything, the seven churches of Asia, as you well know, is Ephesus. There's a lot of ruins there. The others, is not much there at all. And that's what you'll find many times, but those are the places. The earliest biblical attested ruler of Heshbon, and the person who often associated with this biblical site, was, of course, that old wicked king of the Amorites, Sihon, back in Numbers and Deuteronomy. And he, of course, attempted to block Moses and the Israelites from traveling through his domain, which he had conquered from the Moabites. Now, here's another map. You see in the middle the Dead Sea. Off to the right and a little bit there to the north, you see the kingdom of Sihon in that white. You see the word Amorites jutting off to the upper right up there. So, and then Moab in the south. So this is the area, and it's just opposite Jericho, which is just a tad north in Gilgal, of the Dead Sea right there. Kind of give you an idea of the area in which we're discussing tonight. So despite Israel's message of peaceful intentions, this old Sihon, this old king, marched his army out from Heshbon to fight against Moses and Israel in the desert of the east. Now Sihon and his army perished by the sword. And the Old Testament preserves the poetic song of Heshbon in Numbers 21, 27 through 30, the rest of that chapter, which memorializes this Israelite victory over the Amorites and their sacking and defeat of Heshbon. Probably, and perhaps the first person to fully exploit Heshbon's potential as a capital, and an administrative city, of course, and the center there, was probably King Solomon himself. When you go to 1 Kings 4, 19, seems to indicate that Heshbon functioned as the capital, like I said, of his 12th district, governed by one of his officials. His official is named there in 1 Kings. Also in Ecclesiastes 2, and then you have the Song of Solomon in 7:4. Hence, about Solomon's royal estate that was there. Here's a picture, a very common picture, that's taken in that area of the plain, of course, of sheep. And that you see all over the Middle East, all of the time, sheep and their shepherds. In 1971, a professor named Horn and his team began to excavate an enormous rectangular reservoir cut from the bedrock high up on the southern slope of the city of Heshbon. So then archaeologist by the name of Larry Herr, H-E-R-R, who oversaw the excavation of this monumental installation, estimated, and this is hard to comprehend at first, estimated that the reservoir that they found at Heshbon had a capacity that was astounding, a little over 581,000 gallons of water in this reservoir. 581,000 gallons of water. Now, when you go to visit this area, you can still go into some of the subterranean caves that go in all sorts of different directions, and the cisterns below this reservoir. That may give us some information and may attest to the fact that there was an on-site spring that provided water for all of the inhabitants of this city. Well, now that's a lot of water just for the inhabitants. And since it was a huge quantity of water, which far exceeded the needs of these people during this time, perhaps a primary purpose of this huge reservoir that held over 581,000 gallons of water may have been an enormous holding tank for irrigation, feeding cattle on a gravity flow, an extensive array of gardens and orchards, perhaps. Interesting to think about those things. So those local residents built and maintained dozens of cisterns and terraces and other water installations throughout the site. This is taking place in the Old Testament. And it's fascinating to see how they built these things and could survive. You can't survive without water in a very arid area. They enlarged and dwelt in nearby caves and built houses and sheep pens on the slopes there. And the inhabitants fashioned many of the thousands of ceramic vessels and other household artifacts that were found during the excavation. Bones recovered at Heshbon not only reflected that people populated the area, but horses' bones were found, donkey bones, sheep, goats, chickens, doves, and even in one area, pig bones. Now, we know the Israelites didn't eat the pigs. We know they stayed away from that. But other inhabitants didn't. So maybe that reservoir not only provided them regular water for the inhabitants, but also for irrigation, for terraces, and also, of course, for all sorts of animals and other things that were there they could use that water for. The local population terraced the hillside. You know, you've seen a terraced hillside, how it gradually comes down or gradually goes up. Planted olives. They planted grapes. They used oxen to plow those surrounding plains to harvest wheat and barley and other grains. They accomplished all of this by clinging to what? They clung to the institution of hospitality, honor, shame, and, of course, security and solidarity in the face of outside threats. They did things right to survive. And by following these time-tested formulas, their way of life survived, outlasting their many conquerors and continuing almost to this present day. Ceramic vessels, thousands were found. Household artifacts were found there. Like I said, a lot of bones from animals. Coins and pottery. And you've seen pictures of the pottery. Showed you some, I think, last week or week before last. And it's all during this same time period. And they all looked, of course, very similar until you move on out of this area and on into the Roman and Arab times. Now, what you're looking at now, and just, yeah, let me pull this up. What you're looking at here are the Roman steps and a marketplace there at Heshbon. You see the arch in the back. We saw that from a distance a while ago. So this is a Roman marketplace, and the steps that led up to that marketplace there at Heshbon. Now, here's another interesting find I want to bring to your attention. This is an ostracon. It's a piece of pottery with writing on it. That's all it means. When you find a piece of pottery with writing on it in the Middle East and you're digging, wow, you have found a very valuable item, because not only does the shape of that object and the composition of that object tell you something about the inhabitants, but, oh, the writing would tell you a great deal about it. So what does that writing say? Well, I'm going to throw it up on the screen. I'm going to let you read it. I'm not going to read all of this, but this is what it has been translated as. To the king, we've got 35 jars of grain, 8 small cattle. It has measures, 12 measures of gum. It has a 2-year-old cow that's mentioned there. 40 pieces of silver that's written on this, which he gave to. This is a communication inscription. 22 bottles of wine, 10 small cattle, a wheat germ, bottles of wine, jars of grain, hay, a 3-year-old cow. So that's what has been written on there, on that piece of pottery when you examine it very, very closely. Now, as we close, here's a picture of that reservoir that we were talking about as they excavated that and went down, and they estimated 581,000 gallons of water, and that's quite a bit. And then here's a picture of the area, and there's a little sheep pen that has been built there on one of the slopes, not during that time, but later on, of course. So that gives you some idea of what this city contributed to in the Bible. So when you read a verse in the Bible, in the Old Testament, about Heshbon, it's mentioned 37 times. It's very significant, and it had a broad occupation, not only from the Amorites, the Moabites, the Israelites, but also all the way down through, Herod the Great, the great Roman king, and so forth, all the way down through history. So these people were not ignorant. These people knew how to live. They knew how to survive. And even in our cities today, we have all kinds of problems with construction, with water, with other things. And these people here lived 3,000 plus years ago. They didn't have any problem unless somebody came to invade them and shut off all of these resources. So it's interesting to see. Heshbon is a kind of it's a well-known city in archaeological terms, but it's very, very unknown as far as perhaps a lot of us concern, because when we just read over the word and so forth. But it's kind of a unknown area, or one that's not as prominent. A lot of tourists don't go there. Now they go to Amman, Jordan, and they go to Madaba, and they go to Mount Nebo and Jerash over there and Petra. Those are well known, but this one is not that way. But it's very well known in the book that we have laying in our laps and in the house that we live. Questions or comments as we close? Yes.